Chapter 30. Wednesday. Dodo Buffer. The first Dodo was brought back to life in 1966, and that was the official start of the home cloning revolution. Dodo 1A lived a year before being dismantled for inspection, and the second Dodo wasn't sequenced until 1971 as a precursor to the popular home cloning kit. A Dodo V1.2 made from a genome dynamics kit in early 1978 is the earliest still living, and the model has been steadily improving since then. The latest GD V10 is a huge improvement upon early models, able to undertake basic double-entry bookkeeping, and it can be updated wirelessly through a home network. Haynes Dodo Manual. I arrived home having slept almost the entire journey in a hunched-up position, and I was so stiff when I awoke that Friday had to heave me out of the passenger seat. He helped me for the first few steps until my leg had loosened up sufficiently so that I could walk on my own. I noticed that one of the SLS troopers was standing on guard outside and that the lights were still on in Tuesday's laboratory.
"How did it go?" asked Landon.
"Truly weird," I said. "But I could do with wearing a gravity suit more often. You can almost dance in them." I had something to eat and talked to Landon about the afternoon's fun at the time park and just how Smote Solutions planned to avert the cleansing. Landon already knew about this, as Miles had dropped by earlier in the evening to explain that despite protracted negotiations and last-minute submissions by Joffe's team of top-class theologians and ethicists, God's winged tribunes had confirmed that the smiting would go ahead as planned. Joffe had apparently grown quite angry at this and announced that he would elect to remain in his cathedral during the smiting, there to be incinerated within as a protest against the Lord's intransigence. "You're kidding me," I said, my heart falling.
"I'm afraid not," said Landon, resting his hand on mine. "But it could be a bluff."
"It's not," I said, taking a deep breath and rubbing my eyes wearily. "It's not possible to bluff an all-seeing deity."
"Well, it's put a cat among the pigeons. The Lord's people are all in a lather about it, and pleading with Joffe not to question his will and judgment."
It didn't sound good. But then there were other possible outcomes to the event. Smote Solutions, and, as an outside bet, Tuesday and her shield. On the other hand, there had been some news about Aornis. Millen and the Winko had traced the Alpha Morris spider that Aornis got the lift from at Agutta Services. They had traced the car on motorway cameras all the way back to Swindon. Landon had asked them why she would do that, and no one had a good answer. "Does she have any family left in the city?" I asked.
"None that I know of. All the others are in prison or moved away, and the Hades family mansion was given to the city council to be used as a hospital."
"She must be hiding somewhere. Somewhere we wouldn't think to look for her."
"I know where she is," said Landon quite suddenly.
"Where?"
"I had it for a moment," he said, looking mildly confused. "But it's gone."
"Senior moment?" He nodded. "How did you get that bruise on your face?"
"I don't know," he said, touching a purple area above his eye. "I've got some cuts on my knuckles, too. Did you drop into the tattooist's?"
"Forgot again."
"Damn," he said. "We need to find out why you've got the tattoo on your hand when it should be on Tuesday's."
Suddenly, I stopped what I was doing. "What did you just say?" He repeated himself, and I felt a sense of rising panic. But then there was a thump outside the door, and when I investigated, a vase was lying on the carpet. I didn't believe in poltergeists, but just recently we'd been having all the hallmarks of one. Things moving around, doors swinging open, that sort of thing. When I got back to Landon, he asked me if anything was up, as I had looked alarmed when he told me about Tuesday's mindworm. "Nothing of any importance," I said quietly, while having the oddest feeling that I was missing something very important, that there was something I hadn't seen, something vital, just out of reach. "But you're right," I added. "I did forget. And I passed the tattooist's 3 times today." We sat there for a while in silence, mildly annoyed.
"You're back," said the Winco, who had popped his head around the door. "I made some progress into my dark reading matter project. Do you want to hear about it?"
"Are you distracting Tuesday from calculating the unentanglement constant? I've got a brother in line to be barbecued, which I'm really not happy about."
The Winco had to admit that he might have, but that Tuesday often said that going away from a problem often made her fresher on her return, so it wasn't as much of a distraction as we thought.
"Go on, then," I said, getting to my feet and walking with him down the hall to Tuesday's laboratory. "Did the dodo idea work?"
"Quite well, actually. And don't worry, we didn't choose Pickwick. We obtained a V3.2 called Beaky that was at a knockdown price at Pete and Dave's Dodo Emporium. The V10s are just in, so they're getting a few pre-owned in part exchange."
"I'm not sure I like the idea of pre-owned classic dodos being used for experimentation."
"There are risks in everything," said the Winco with a shrug, "and the dark reading matter is important."
We walked into Tuesday's laboratory to find her dozing in her armchair. She'd been working hard and it was late. We were going to sneak back out, but she jumped awake.
"Mom," she said, "it worked."
I sat down in front of the screen as the Winco told me what they'd done.
"One of my imaginary childhood friends was about to leave for the DRM, as his host and creator was in the Daniel Street home for the almost gone. The ICF was called Joey, and I persuaded him to take Beaky with him when he went across."
"Okay, let me get this straight in my mind. Imaginary childhood friends go to the DRM because they're like living fiction?"
"Pretty much," said the Winco. "But we think that everything that has been unrecorded within a deceased person's mind also transfers to the dark reading matter. I think that's why the dark reading matter is so big. It's not just books that have been destroyed, but is loaded with memories. In fact, with 70 or so billion people having already died, the fabric of the DRM might be composed almost entirely of lost moments."
"Lost moments? How many?"
"Lots, and I think they're packed quite tight."
"Okay," I said somewhat dubiously. "So where do we go from here?"
"Right," said Tuesday, who was getting more excited. "We took the encephalovision to the home for the almost gone and made sure it was tuned in to Beaky the Dodo's cerebral buffer. At 9:30, we got what we were after. The imaginary childhood friend's host died, and Joey moved across, taking Beaky with him."
"In the same way that I could once jump into the book world, with someone holding on to me?"
"Pretty much."
"And?" I asked. "We waited for a minute, but nothing. The encephalovision simply showed static. But then, Beaky suffered an overload of sensory input, and her buffer started to fill. We started receiving a picture a minute after that. These are the first images ever of the dark reading matter." Tuesday flipped a switch, and the playback began. At first, it was difficult to make out anything at all, but soon shapes started to form on the screen. Strange creatures that looked a lot like pepper pots, with bumps all over their lower bodies, domed heads and a sink plunger sticking out in front.
"What are they?" I asked.
"We think they're Daleks," said Tuesday, "an early type."
"You were saying the dark reading matter is populated by Daleks?"
"No, we believe this might be a lost Doctor Who episode from one of the master tapes wiped in the 70s.
"Wiped because they didn't have room to store it?"
"Probably because it wasn't very good," said the Winco. "It's possible the dark reading matter might contain all forms of lost or discarded storytelling endeavour."
"Or Beaky has a Dalek fixation. You know how obsessive dodos can be."
"All too well," said Tuesday, looking across at Pickwick, who was on the floor attempting to sort dust motes into their various colours. "But it wasn't only Daleks. Watch the rest."
So I did, and in those 7 minutes of buffered dodo thoughts, We observed what appeared to be several half-completed buildings, and then a woman hunting tortoises, apparently alone on an island. But just as it was getting interesting, the vision feed cut off, and the images were gone.
"That's it," said the Winko. "We won't get any more."
"It's not conclusive," I said, "but the reference to the tortoise hunting sounds like Melville's Norfolk Isle and the Chola Widow."
"That's not lost," observed the Winko.
"No, but Isle of the Cross is most definitely lost, and it was often assumed the survivor might have been a reworking of the lost original. It's not 100% proof, but it's the closest so far to establishing that the dark reading matter exists. Write it all up and get a report over to Commander Bradshaw as soon as you can." It was an interesting development, but I had too much on my mind to be either excited or worried about it, and I saw it simply as an ongoing part of my continued interest in the book world, even though I hadn't been able to read myself into the book world since my accident. It wasn't simply being physically well enough to cross the barrier between the real and the red, but also the mental concentration required. I ordered Tuesday to her room to get some sleep, kissed her goodnight, and then walked upstairs to my bedroom. "I wonder if I could read myself into the book world while a day player," I mused as I brushed my hair.
"With a brain like that," mused Landon, "I'd be seriously surprised if you couldn't."
I read until I fell asleep, and slept soundly until I woke quite suddenly at 4 in the morning, thinking I'd heard a noise. I went downstairs to find the TV and the lights on, then made myself a sandwich and some hot chocolate, and watched a rerun of The Streets of Wootton Bassett, which was every bit as bad as I remembered. But the odd thing was, even though I'd made myself a sandwich and a hot chocolate, I couldn't remember eating them. Yet they were gone. So I made myself some more. I didn't sleep after that, and was still awake when the early breakfast show with Adrian Lush came on at 5 a.m. I threw my shoe at the television, but missed.